Extra time.
He shoots, and it's a goal!
Velkommen to the Sunday Vibes Extra Time podcast. I'm not going to do the accent, but Patrick, Chris and me are back. This week we are trying to fix Bayern München. Yes, wow. A monster task that you guys have set us on Twitter. Chris will be taking on facts with Rafa Benitez and you guys at home are providing this week's rosettes. Let's kick it off. Yes, this week's how to fix is the Bavarians, and gentlemen, the Bundesliga is back with a bang. Big clubs struggling, young talent thriving, and we have an actual title race on our hands after Bayern München destroyed the Bundesliga last year, won it by 21 points. Oof. Schalke finished second.
Pathetic.
So far from vintage.
It's horrific.
Now, of course, not exactly tumultuous times at Bayern Munich in the summer just past, but they did look at two or three managers and ultimately settled on Kovac, Niko Kovac, and his brother, who's assistant, by the way, and looks exactly like him.
Attractive then, because I quite like the look of Niko Kovac. Wouldn't say no myself.
Absolutely lovely looking fella.
Primo Dilf. But as Raf Honigstein highlighted, he was the man available rather than the man they wanted. And he seemed to have arrested any fears, any doubts people had about him in that opening exchange of the season when he won seven games on the bounce. However, they went through a month of misery. They didn't claim a single victory in four games, and a lot of people started to call for his head.
Yes, get him on a spike.
Okay, so we're going to visit the manager and whether we think he's got a long-term future in a second, but I'm going to set a little bit more of a scene as to how this season has gone, how they find themselves in sixth, because their big players not exactly doing it for them at the moment. Neuer, having a terrible start to the campaign, has made a number of high-profile mistakes. They unsuccessfully tried to sell Boateng in the summer to PSG. PSG didn't want to pay his wages. James already calling out the manager's pedigree. I think after
good
he
to
was...
see.
I'm not surprised.
After he was dropped, he actually went straight for the jugular and said, someone needs to tell him this isn't Frankfurt.
But equally, he was dropped.
I love that. Hello the belt.
He was dropped in after the game.
In which he scored.
He scored. I think he also got an assist and was given man of the match. Kovac dropped in the next week.
Yeah, we've got to come on to James Rodriguez in a bit, but let's not get sidetracked.
And we've also got to come on to his rotational policy at some stage.
It's horrific.
Right. Yes, because I don't think there's been three or four games in a row this season where Kovac has gone for the same team.
Not a single game he started the same lineup.
Although there is a consistency with some of the older heads he's picking.
Okay.
Okay, so it's the same sort of guys rotating in the same sort of positions. Anyway, despite decent shot numbers, which we'll visit in detail like we normally do a little bit later on, they are struggling to break a low block. For example, when they lost 3-0 at home to Gladbach, and that was extremely flattering on Gladbach, six of their 14 shots came from outside the box. Only two came from inside the six-yard box. And like you just said, the squad and the starting 11 is an issue for multiple reasons. Rotation, as well as age, which will be a key component to this podcast. In a 3-2 defeat to Borussia Dortmund, eight of the starting 11 started the Champions League final in 2013 against Dortmund.
Oh my God.
It's literally not good enough, is it? That's such bad management, but not just from Kovac, from the top level as well.
Well, yeah, this is the whining, right, about how everybody else spends loads of money and buy and don't. Well, that's why you've got a really old squad and why you haven't won anything outside your league in a few years.
And this is why I'm sympathetic towards Kovac, because they've not turned over that squad in a number of years. It should have been last year, I think, in my opinion. Again, we'll deal with that later. But Uli Hoeneß appears ready for wholesale changes. Came out recently and said, you must tell the players they're under pressure in the next 3 to 4 months. And then you must see who is needed and who is not. And we'll visit contract situations in a little bit. But pretty strong words. Now, before I touch upon Kovac, let's bring people to speed on him. You have a few words about another member in the hierarchy at Bayern. Please, will you talk about football manager legend Hasan Salihamidžić?
Yes, well, nicknamed Brazzo, as the Bayern Munich fans will know him. No, Brazzo, mate.
Right, okay.
No way your mind's jumping straight to. I don't have a clue why he's nicknamed Brazzo.
His name's Hasan Salihamidžić.
No, Hasan Salihamidžić, I think, is the actual pronunciation.
Okay, but it's spelled Salihamidžić.
Yeah, whatever. But he's called Brazzo. That's what everybody calls him, Brazzo. And he was a man who has been appointed to sporting director, succeeding the great Matthias Sammer, who, of course, had an incredible record, treble winner in his very first season as sporting director at the club, appointed Pep Guardiola. It goes on and
on. He was Guardiola's man, wasn't he?
He was the main man. Mm. He, of course, sadly had to step away with the club with an illness.
Okay.
And the man who replaced him... And now I don't want to go full Andy Tate here, but he definitely got the job on the technicality of a legend that recommended him. Because if it wasn't for Hinks and Uli Hoeneß, he would have been nowhere near the job. This is his first sporting director role. He, of course, did spend a long time at Bayern Munich, I think about 9 seasons, but he stepped straight in there. And the predominant reason from the interviews that I saw was that he knows the club.
And
there's not a phrase I hate in football more than he knows.
But that has served Bayern pretty well. When appointing for various positions in the past throughout the club.
To a level.
Insistent that that's how that culture of excellence remains.
But the people insisting that used to play for the club. Half of them have gone to prison or have been investigated for various crimes. And they're all in the club hierarchy. I'd say that at the managerial, at the football level, those people have not been quite so successful.
Hold on, Patrick. Zammer's
a Dortmund legend, not a Bayern legend.
Are you saying there's some self-preservation in there?
I think there might be.
I think there might be as well. And now Sammer has, of course, rejoined Dortmund in January, so is now working for the Yellow Wall. But anyway, just quickly back to Brazzo. He, of course, was in charge of the recruitment of a new manager at the club, selected, as you I think we're going to come on to, a number of different managers, and settled on Kovac. He didn't go for Tuchel, apparently. Okay.
Definitely did.
But equally, his recruitment through January and last summer, I think, was very poor. I think we're going to come on to that in a little bit as well. But he has recently been called out by a number of different ex-Bayern Munich players.
Okay.
Most notably, Stefan Effenberg, who came out and said, he's pathetic. He's not doing a good enough job.
That's not like Stefan Effenberg.
Yeah. I know. It's almost as if he is outspoken. He said he's come out, he's not doing a good enough job. He's way too friendly with the players. He doesn't rule by enough of an iron fist. Obviously, I don't know if you guys saw the quotes from Brazzo last season when Carlo Ancelotti was in charge.
I'm sorry, I can't not laugh at Brazzo. It just makes me laugh every time.
But obviously Carlo Ancelotti bought all of his backroom team in. And his backroom team are notoriously rogue, I think is the best phrase to put
it. Why is that?
Well, let's just put it this way. The head of fitness is a chain smoker and would just be stood on the touchline smoking.
Now, is he Italian?
I think he might have been Italian. But anyway, it didn't go that. Let's just say that didn't go down well with the Bayern Munich hierarchy.
Yeah, that's okay, what got him Das Boot, wasn't it? The lack of rigorous training
behind the scenes. And this was a decision kind of made by Brazzo that following Ancelotti gate, new managers that come into the team can only bring a limited amount of backroom staff with them.
Okay.
They have to keep, I think it's something like they have to keep 80% of the club backroom staff when they're employing their own members.
Okay. I mean, that might have served David Moyes well when he probably would have. Made wholesale
but
changes.
Equally,
it's not that unreasonable.
It's not to a level, but the interview in which I think it's Hinks, might be Hoeneß, one of those two comes out and he says, well, you know, Pep Guardiola brought his own people in and we found that the same with Carlo Ancelotti, it hasn't helped the club. And I'm pretty sure Pep was pretty influential amongst those staff members that are still at the club probably now. But equally, for me, Brazzo, the man who appointed Niko Kovac, who's been there 18 months in charge of the club, I don't think he's the right man for the sporting director role at Bayern Munich. I don't think he's experienced enough. I don't think he's a good enough negotiator. I think his identification of talent hasn't been good enough over the last two transfer windows. Wagner and Goretzka, who we're going to come on to, not good enough signings at that level with a full squad turnover. And I don't think he's the man to implement the change that is needed at Bayern Munich.
You think his day-to-day operations?
I think get rid of him and let's appoint Chris Hamel.
Okay.
Hermel.
Yes,
for
Chris Hermel.
The sake of this week's episode. Right, okay, so I took a closer look at Kovac and Bayern in general this season to tee us up for who these boys, as my chief scouts, would bring in to arrest this slump. Now, let's just touch briefly upon Kovac, because before his, I want to say miraculous, but that might be generous, season with Frankfurt last year, I didn't really know who he was. So he was at Salzburg, manager of the B team, and he ultimately left the Austrian team when they appointed Roger Schmidt instead. He was actually favourite to get that job, so left under a little bit of a cloud. He then went to Croatia, where he guided them through that two-legged playoff against Iceland. He beat them 2-0. But his contract was terminated early after a poor 2014 World Cup where they won one game, lost two. So not off to a flyer in his managerial career. But as we witnessed last week with Quique Setién, that's okay. You know, a faltering start. Learning the ropes. Because things got a lot better at Frankfurt. So two Pokal finals, won them their first trophy last year since 1983, I believe, when he secured the trophy, beating Bayern in the final, maybe sort of increased his stock amongst the Bayern hierarchy in that regard. But his playing style at Frankfurt, vastly different from what is expected at Bayern Munich. Now, his emphasis at Frankfurt was defensive stability and wing play. He had a back five system that sort of resembled an arrowhead with a midfield cluster of three. It was actually coined Covernaccio. Okay,
who's
relating
done that?
To Catenaccio, which is a very defensive Italian style of football. It's crap.
It's crap. Whoever's named that is pathetic.
Right. I quite liked it.
Pretty works better in German.
So he's never managed a possession-based side, and the irony is he's now struggling against teams that set up in the same way that his Frankfurt side did. So sitting defences, people that play directly, vertically. And he's got a bit of time, well, his contract dictates that he's got a bit of time to sort it out, to make that transition at Bayern. He signed a three-year contract, but not exactly off to a flyer.
Yeah,
okay?
That's
so, I've got in here, just as a little nuance to this whole conversation, could he revert to a back three? So Tuchel found some joy in doing so at Dortmund. RB Leipzig have recently reverted to a three, sacrificing a defender to infuse a bit more energy in pressing midfield. We saw them have a very good time of that in their first season when Naby Keita was the fulcrum of that side. And Hoffenheim have utilised this system well against Bayern, beating them twice and drawing once in the last four games.
Yeah.
So it might be that Bayern need a little evolution, not a revolution, but he could try that back three that served him so well at Eintracht Frankfurt. In 16-17, he played a 4-2-3-1, but in his second year, much reverted to a 3-1-4-2.
Three at the back is, although it's happened a few times over the last few seasons, I did a bit of research into how many teams this season have been operating with a three at the back, and only really three teams in the Bundesliga actually operate with a three at the back system, which is generally Leipzig, Bremen, and
Hoffenheim do sometimes as well.
Hoffenheim, I think, occasionally do, but generally it's not a done thing in Germany, I don't think, to use a three at the back.
So what I've kind of tried to surmise there is that people have tried it against the bigger sides,
yes,
to a certain degree of effect. So his last year, setting him up to move into this season, he reverted to that 3-1-4-2, like I said. He finished eighth, and won the Pokal. It was actually their first trip since 1988, not 1983. Expected goals gave them the seventh best defensive record. So again, he likes his defensive solidity. He sets up to limit high quality chances by the opposition, and they finish around 10th for expected goals. So
It's not terrible.
Spectacular.
Yeah, not managed a free scoring side who generate high quality chances. And if you'd like to know more about expected goals, Paddy Van Straten did a stunning job over on
Euro Football Daily. Yes, you did actually, mate. I love that piece. Well done.
Explaining too much. The basic concept. Now, I've got to say, mate, I was welling up.
That was actually really good, mate. I mean, the comments were bizarre, but
yeah, the comments were aggressive, but I like that.
But one thing I will say on that Frankfurt season is towards the back end, they did not that they completely fucked it off, but definitely put more concentration into the Pokal. So they weren't, I think they were rotating really heavily towards the back end of the season.
Well, he actually got to the Pokal the year before as well.
Yeah.
So he clearly loves cup competitions.
Because I think they were like fourth in the league around Christmas, and I think they tailed off pretty vastly towards the back end when they were concentrating on the Pokal. Don't quote me on that, but if I remember rightly, that's the case.
Well, I think in that season, their top goal scorer was, I can't remember, it was someone on seven goals. I think I've got a note.
Was it Ante Rebic? No.
A little bit late. It wasn't Rebic. It was actually a midfielder. So they didn't have the firepower to see them, clinch that sort of top six finish that gets them European football. Mm. Now, this season, expected goals has Bayern top on 23 points. So he can count himself a little bit unlucky to be sitting sixth. In fact, it pretty much swaps them and Dortmund over. Dortmund apparently riding their luck according to the underlying stats. Now, this season, Bayern Munich are top for shots taken per game on 17.5. They're conceding the fewest on 7.8 per game. They're taking the third most shots on target and they're completing the third most dribbles, which is maybe an indication that they're not as effective in wide positions as they used to be, because they used to be well ahead for dribbles. But Dortmund in these regards, so for shots taken, a ninth. Shots conceded, third. Shots taken on target, sixth.
Yeah, I mean, it does help when Paco Alcácer, every single thing he touches hits the back of the net, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's running hot at Dortmund at the moment, and they've improved. They've definitely improved, but this idea that this is going to last forever...
Not happening. I completely
agree. I'm not
agree.
Really having it.
Lucien Favre's men may yet fall off a cliff.
Though he does traditionally break expected goals. Like, Lucien Favre has overperformed.
Always.
Especially defensively versus expected goals for pretty much his entire career.
Yeah, I think Knutsen said that he is the man who defies the model, isn't he?
Him and Dyche.
I was going to say, one of the interesting parts about your little... your video on EFD was that Favre and Dyche consistently overperformed because of that low block. All the defenders getting in the way of these shots, right, and expected goals doesn't take into account the position of the defenders. Facts I learned from my friend Patrick Van Strong.
One-on-one on EFD.
And Kovac actually not all that different. Kovac is probably the most defensive coach that Bayern Munich have had in a long time. And as a result, their defence is pretty solid. To me, the problems here are principally in attack. Mm. Often... what they've failed to have is either that little bit of star power which enables them to break out of defence, or they've really kind of lacked the legs now in some of these older guys on the wing to get forward as well as to hustle in defence.
Although I did watch the Ajax Champions League match with vast interest and they were cut to ribbons by Ajax.
Dusan Tadic was running riot.
They were fantastic,
don't get me wrong, but they really could not cope with that floating nine in Dusan Tadic.
And things have been a little bit more stable since back-to-back victories in the Champions League over AEK Athens. I think they beat Wolfsburg 3-1 away from home. So he's kind of turned it round to an extent. And against Dortmund, they were exceedingly good at the Westfalenstadion for the first 45.
Yeah, they really were.
Absolutely smacked Dortmund about. Anyway, let's quickly get to your signings, because this is what the squad looks like overall.
Okay,
so the average age of the 23-man squad is 27.4. Now, to give you a bit of context, Dortmund's is 24.8. And Manchester City, who we consider the elite side, the best-run side in Europe at the moment, maybe aside from Juventus, theirs is 26.5.
And I did see, I believe that's the oldest in the league, isn't it?
27.4, it could be. I think the Bundesliga tends to skew quite young, doesn't it?
I think it is the oldest squad in the league. And I think if you were to stack it up, there'd only be two older squads in the Premier League, as far as what I saw.
Who are they?
Was
nice.
Burnley and Watford.
Not great company.
Yeah, not who you really want to be there with. They've got a Serie A squad in the Bundesliga, basically.
They have.
It's not ideal.
But if that was 26.4, no issue whatsoever, which is why I'm pretty insistent they've waited a year too long to start addressing the issues in this squad that are now becoming quite deep-seated.
Yep.
So in 18-19, Costa went out for €40 million. Vidal went out for €18 million. Rudy made a €16 million profit on him. Very buying. And Bernat for five. Only Alphonso Davies was bought in. Now, according to the club website, Bayern posted a record amount of turnover in 17-18, making €660 million with an annual net profit of 30. So you boys, as my chief scouts, have a lot of money to spend.
It's United territory, baby.
Bayern have been profitable 26 years in a row.
Boy.
That's unheralded. Surely that's a record.
That's absolutely outrageous. And actually, they took more commercial revenue in the 2016-17 season than any other football team. That's
what?
Money from sponsorships, merchandising, advertising.
More than United.
Their revenue from commercial was $374 million. But by their total revenue, they were only fourth in the world. So where they're lacking is kind of match day, TV broadcast, and football rights to some.
And they could increase their match day significantly, but they actually have frozen prices on their tickets and refuse to fall in line with English clubs in terms of charging ridiculous prices, which is very admirable. Lovely context there, Van Strong.
Dovetailing
like York and Cole here. Absolutely immense.
I think that... we'll come back to it in a minute. I was going to talk about Alphonso Davies, but I think that's also part of a programme of them trying to expand.
Into the US.
Yeah. And generally speaking, I think, you know, they've toured in the US a couple of times.
Yeah.
You know, they played the All-Star team under Pep Guardiola. And
they've got their own social media US account as well.
Well, and actually, the Bundesliga rights after the Premier League are the most lucrative in world football. But the difference is that they're shared out much more evenly than La Liga's rights are, which is why Barcelona and Real Madrid continue to get a kind of disproportionate amount of money from their football.
A lot of Germans on that continent, especially Argentina. So,
Well, Brazil as well.
Moving on. Right, the contracts of the players who were up in 2019 are as follows. Rodriguez, Robin, Ribery and Rafinha. So, barring Rodriguez, No real surprises.
I mean, what to?
He is still.
Are we going to address?
They have the option to buy on Rodriguez, yeah, which yeah. would give
50
him
50 mil, isn't it? Though,
but it would appear
that another 35. They already paid 15 for the loan.
He's played his last game of 2018. He's injured. It would appear his relationship with Kovac is deteriorating. In De Clasica, when they were down, Kovac made all three substitutions and didn't turn to James at all.
Well, I think James has pissed him off with that squad. I think James pissed him off with that public Baron.
I'm not surprised, though. Like, a lot of people have done it. It's just that Robin and Ribery, who've been there for long enough, know to do it behind closed doors. It's what they did with Ancelotti.
Yeah. Ribery also slapped a reporter recently, which is a little bit rogue, isn't
he
it?
He is a tool, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's not the best record.
I mean, he apologised in a club video, but quite clearly to a teleprompter, and he was reading his apology verbatim. So
Theresa May vibes.
Did he mean it? Anyway, 2020, Gnabry and Wagner's contract is up. Now, I don't think that we're too alarmed about that. Two squad players.
Wow.
Gnabry's been playing well of recent, but we'll revisit that in a second. Here's where it gets really scary, because in 2019, you're looking at overhauling these guys in the next couple of years, which is why 2019, I think, will be crucial for Bayern. So in 2021, Lewandowski's contract is up. Thiago, Hummels, Müller, Alaba, Boateng, Martinez, Neuer and Sanchez.
They are a lot, but 2021, we've still got 2.5 years. And I would be surprised if most of those haven't got extension clauses.
And I would let some of them go before then.
Yeah.
I think we'll get into who we recommend to sell.
But not ideal.
Not ideal.
You've got 3, 6, 9 first-teamers potentially out the door in 2 years. And if it gets to 18 months, you have to sell in that winter transfer market, and renewing their contract might become a bit of an issue.
I would say, though, that if they're still first-teamers at that point, then you've kind of made bigger mistakes anyway, though, because Lewandowski will be 32, Martinez will be 32, Boateng will be 32, Hummels will be 31. Yeah, the list goes on.
They're aging out well around that period.
Yeah.
But effectively, over the next 2 years, they've got to find 8 people who are first-team worthy.
I'd be looking to sell now on half of those. Honestly.
Yes, and I agree, and we'll come to that in a moment, but you guys are going to take the floor. Now, in my opinion, I've got down here some of the kind of signings that we want to make, and I'm looking for a centre-back, a central midfielder, wingers, a centre-forward, and a possible wild card. Ooh. So pretty much the spine of the side. Now, these are problem areas I've identified. So I need a backup for Lewandowski. I'm going to revisit his numbers in greater detail later, but still scoring at a very decent rate, 7 in 10 this campaign. But take a closer look at his shot numbers. They are clearly declining, which means that the second striker has to contribute more, which Thomas Müller has not been doing since 2015.
Yeah.
Okay. We need more creativity from the midfield, as well as possibly a regista. A long-term partner for Nicolas Sula, and long-term heirs to Robin and Ribery.
Oh, I've
now,
got it covered, baby.
Feel free to disagree or bring something new to the table, but let's kick off with centre-back, shall we?
Work our way forwards.
You want to take the first one, Pat, or you want me to jump forwards in?
I'm happy to go.
Go on then, baby.
I really struggled with this.
I did to a level. Can I just make a clear point?
Do you mean
point?
Generally or on centre-back?
On centre-back.
I struggle with everything.
Can I just make one quick point before we go into the players? Is that we've made an active decision not to talk about players we've already talked about on previous podcasts.
Yeah. Fantastic point, well made.
So the likes of Memphis Depay, who we all in agreement would be a great signing for Bayern Munich, we've chosen not to talk about because we've talked about him in length, in depth on other podcasts, mainly Man United and Real Madrid. So if you've come here expecting to hear about players we've spoken about before, you're in for some fresh stuff. So Pato, take the floor.
My worry is the age. And to be honest, when I look at the centre-backs, I'm reasonably happy with our options. I think Sula is obviously great. Hummels is 29, and while he's declined a little bit in range, he's still got at least another couple of years contributing. Okay. Boateng, if we keep him, couple of years contributing. Javi Martinez, probably sell.
Go. Yeah,
I think Javi Martinez goes. However, if you do go to three at the back, Kimmich and Alaba have both played in it. Now, I'm not saying that's ideal, but it's something you could think about. So anyway, I've gone for a 21-year-old. I thought about Nathan Aki, you know. I thought about 23-year-old Nathan Aki. He's very fast, and my worry is that Sula is exceptionally slow.
See, a lot of people disagreed with you on this point on Continental Club. I don't know if you saw it in the comments. They said his acceleration is poor, but his general speed when he gets going is okay.
Yeah, but that's kind of like you know,
acceleration is the key to a centre.
Yeah, there was a thing published a few months ago which had the top speeds of players at Arsenal, and Granit Xhaka ranked quite highly, but it doesn't really matter because he never gets up to top speed. Like, the point is how quickly he can turn and chase a guy down, and that's what worries me about Sula.
Just wanted to give you the chance to poo-poo those people.
Your man's athletic.
Well, I think he needs to be somewhat athletic.
Okay.
And I did kind of like Aki, but he's 5'11", and also, I don't actually know how good he is. There's this reputation that he's good, and when I see him, I quite like watching him play. But Bournemouth are not a good defensive side, or have not been until this season, and I want to see more from him if I'm going to get him at Bayern.
Okay.
So I've gone for a safer option. I've gone for 21-year-old Fiorentina centre-back Nikola Milenkovic.
Okay.
And all those who aren't watching this, I'm circling a name on my sheet of paper. I have Milenkovic down. We're on the same wavelength already. A beautiful.
I have never heard of the guy, so please do.
He's 6 foot five, Joe. He's 6 foot five.
Do we really need another 6 foot five centre back with Sula there?
You don't need him if he's immobile, but that doesn't apply to Milenkovic. Milenkovic has been playing right back this season, and he's extremely quick. He only joined Fiorentina in 2017, about €5 million. He's played every minute in Serie A so far, and he plays centre back for Serbia and had a good World Cup, I think. Fiorentina currently have the second best defence in Serie A by goals conceded. XG has them third in defence. And I just think he's got exactly the things that we're looking for in a young centre-back. He's got a couple of years to get blooded into that first team. But I looked at, since he's arrived in Fiorentina, he's completed 79% of the tackles he's attempted. That's really, really high. But Umtiti is on about 84%. He's 4 years older than Milenkovic. So he's really in the top range here. He's also second in the team for completed long balls per game, though with Hummels and Boateng and Sula there, that's not necessarily going to be something he has to do, but it's nice to know he can.
I'm not so sure you need a ball distributor at the back of Bayern.
No, but you want somebody who's comfortable on the ball. Like, I agree that he doesn't need to be, you know, the conduit through which all your play goes. But I want him to be comfortable, because otherwise he's going to... It's amazing how much one player can completely hamstring your passing game.
And we mentioned that Kovac liked to play sort of long and direct, mix it up a little bit beforehand, and he actually has very good long distribution, completing 4 long balls a game.
Yeah, he's second in the squad already, behind. Right? He's second in the squad behind Lafont for long balls completed per game, and he's actually in the top 5 for total passes too, which that really tells you more about style usually. But when you consider that he's playing right back, that's quite unusual for a right back to be that involved in play. And what I think as well is when you're playing at the top level, we want to get a player here who's not just going to be good enough for the Bundesliga, but is going to be good enough for the Champions League. And if you're clearly the weakest passer on your team, then when it comes to the Champions League, teams are going to know that, and they're going to instruct players to go and press you specifically. So we have to get somebody who's at least competent on the ball, if not Boateng level brilliant.
Yeah, okay, so do you want me to jump in?
To be honest, I'm not wild about the centre-back options out there right now.
I'm not either. I mean, the players that I immediately identified, and I actually think Bayern... away from our picks, I think Bayern will go for Benjamin Pavard. I think we've spoken about him at pretty decent length, so we're not going to go into Benjamin Pavard, but I'd be surprised if they didn't move for him this summer or even in January.
Yeah, another one that can play right back as well. I've already kind of, in my head, processed his signing.
Yeah.
He's part of the squad.
I was tempted by Matthias Ginter. I opted not to go for him in the end. I was also tempted by Antonio Rudiger, but the new contract put me off in a big way.
Ooh, he would be coin.
So I have gone for Deo Upamecano from RB Leipzig.
Well, can I just stop you there? Because this is extremely interesting. On my piece of paper, which I'm now circling now, we try to keep this as organic as possible. Don't tell each other about our prep. I have Milinkovic and Upamecano.
Nice.
So it is down to just how you guys pitch this.
I love Upamecano, but his sample size is small. We don't really know how good he's going to be. He's been part of a fairly poor RB Leipzig backline. RB Leipzig last season conceded as many goals as second bottom Hamburg. Ooh. So not a great defensive record, but I give him some slack. I give him some slack because of his age. Obviously 20 years old, and he is under contract until 2021. I believe he's just turned 20 as well. And I saw some reports in the German media saying his price tag would be upwards of £80 million. Because, of course, RB Leipzig don't need the money. He only joined from Salzburg, the sister club of Leipzig, I believe in 2017 for just €10 million, which is a snip, and obviously happened because they are connected. Now, Again,
can I just say it's an absolute farce they're in the same group as Celtic?
Oh yeah, it is a bit funny that
Salzburg
they're in the same
group. Salzburg are going to let them roll, Leipzig roll them over, and we'll go crashing out of Europe. I had to interject there, my bad.
No worries. The reason that I liked Deo was mainly because of his athleticism. Mm-hmm. Now, you've also identified this as a problem. I have too. Nicolas Sula, as some people might claim, is fast. His, like Pat said, his acceleration is not.
Yeah, his first step.
Mats Hummels, where he was once quite an athletic player.
Yeah, he was.
A ball-playing centre-back. I feel like injuries have hampered him a little bit there. Mm-hmm. Jerome Boateng, certainly injuries have hampered him. He can't even string together 20 games a season. And Nicholas, and I've always talked about Nicholas Suter actually, but I would actually liken Upamecano's playing style to a young Mats Hummels.
Ooh.
I've also made a couple
how intriguing
of
that's,
correlations.
That's where I would pitch Mats Hummels to a fan that has never seen Upamecano play. I think he's akin to a young Mats Hummels in that he puts up massive defensive numbers. I think 4 tackles and interceptions he was averaging last season, which is absurd for a central defender.
That's a lot for a defender. That's a bit worrying for a defender.
Yeah,
that tells you a lot about Leipzig's
defense. I think
that,
yeah, which tells you a lot about Leipzig's defense. He was covering a lot for Willy Orban, who is the captain of the club, but maybe not quite of the level that RB Leipzig are operating now.
There was a game we did on Euroroundup where he completed 9 tackles and interceptions in a game.
Yeah, Jesus. That's absolutely absurd. 88% pass accuracy last season, which is not terrible either. Mm-hmm.
Dropped a bit this season.
And I think he's completing just over 3.4 accurate long balls a game, which isn't terrible, but equally not
that's
as good.
Good.
Not as good as, what was his name? Milinkovic.
It's round about the same as Milinkovic,
It's not terrible, but for me, Upamecano's athleticism is the reason I would sign him. And I feel like despite him not having a huge sample size, his form for the French youth teams at international level, and just from what I've read about Upamecano from previous coaches, to me indicates an extremely high talent ceiling.
Here's my worry. You're going to pay an awful lot for what you're getting. Paying an awful lot for a guy who is not actually going to be a first choice centre-back for you at first.
To a level, I agree, but in the same way Barca are going to go for De Ligt, I think it's worth the risk.
I think De Ligt has shown more, I want to say.
Yeah, maybe. I think De Ligt's probably a season ahead of where Upamecano is. And if Upamecano could do some of the things he's doing in the Bundesliga and the Champions League, I think then we could talk about him being an £80 million player for Bayern Munich.
And that's a very good point. And he has shown versatility in the European competition. So this season, averaging, I think, around 2.5 tackles and interceptions per game, which is a little bit down from the season before, but maybe they're just a little bit more defensively stable under Ralf Rangnick.
Yeah.
But he's actually completing 4 tackles and interceptions in the Europa League. And obviously I have a vested interest in RB Leipzig, as they've been in Celtic's group. And what has impressed me about him is his responsibility, the responsibility he shoulders. He is the one who steps out of the line. He makes nice sort of midfield kind of splitting passes.
Yeah.
And in fact, he's completing 52 passes a game. So he's very comfortable on the ball.
I think it might have even been Willy Orban who said that he is the best defender at the club. And that is, like, I think, fairly indicative that I think the captain of the club is saying that a 19-year-old is the best.
Klostermann and Nordi Mukiele. Like, there's a lot of talent there.
I like Mukiele. He's been playing left-back, hasn't he?
Yeah, whereas he was playing centre-back last season in France. But, I mean, my feeling is, if you're going to take a gamble to this extent, you could take a gamble on someone a lot cheaper. You could go to Nice and get like Malon Sarr.
But are you going to get
someone like
potential
that
talent ceiling?
Well, I don't know. I mean, like Sarr, for instance, has a very high reputation. I mean, they could have gone for Diop last season as well. Mm. Like, these are guys who would have been interesting gambles for them to take.
So,
and what they've shown is not vastly dissimilar from what.
So going Dragon's Den on you, I think that Bayern have the money to spend and risk. They haven't risked a transfer in a very long time.
I think that depends on what else you've got.
I have got some other sheathed big name players.
So my big concern is that we'd have to spend the majority of our transfer budget on Upamecano, and is centre back the most immediate problem?
It's not, but the rest of my transfers, actually, as much as we've just said, I'm sheathing some big players, aren't the most costly.
A little bit more savvy.
Really?
Do you know what your
total is?
I could estimate right now.
Have a little thinky.
So why are you having a little thing?
Just over 200.
I've got 270, roughly.
Interesting.
Mine would be in a similar ballpark, 250 maybe.
Okay.
I have a short list with some free transfers on there that could complement this young gamble quite well. One note on Upamecano is he does seem to have great anticipation. 2.1 interceptions per night. It's the same as Mats Hummels now.
That's very high.
There's areas of his game that are really mature and suggest, like you said, he's got a very high ceiling and might be worth the money.
Yeah, I think Mats has always been a fantastic reader of the game. That's been part of his, even since he was a youngster, that's been how he has played.
And he's very, very good on the ball for such a kind of large, unwieldy man. It's, and he likes to bring it out of the fence in the same way that Upamecano does. But it's whether we see him as a long-term heir to Mats Hummels, or really we should be replacing Boateng here, shouldn't we? Because Hummels can play for another 2 or 3 years.
I think Boateng can play off and on. If you can't offload him for a lot of money, I think it's worth absolutely keeping him around. He's not getting paid a huge sum.
But he hasn't played over 20 games in 4 or 5 seasons. Hasn't made over 20 starts, sorry.
I don't think that matters that much. Like, I mean, if somebody's going to give you a big fee for him, take it. If they're not, I don't see why you wouldn't keep him on the books. Like, why would you get rid of him for 15, 20 mil? He doesn't earn that much.
Yeah.
You're clearing a lot of wages in the form of Ribery, Robin and Rafinha.
And you're also losing a lot of experience over the next 2 seasons. Yeah, and it is important to have experience at the club.
Does he hamper the progression of someone like Upamecano if he comes in? Because he's still going to want minutes, Boateng.
Yeah, but you say to him, that's tough luck. Like, I mean, I'm sure that he'd rather stay at Bayern earning a slightly better wage. And he knows he's not going to play those games. You say to him, basically, you're going to play as much as you are fit. But fundamentally, you're no longer the first choice centre back, and I think, given his injury problems, he has to accept that. And then if he does agitate for a move, you can get rid of him.
And a nice transition period.
But basically, I think, like, if we go and look around for kind of experienced free agents or something, what we're trying to do essentially is find a Boateng, like somebody who can come in 10, 15 games a season and do a decent job. I've already got that guy in my club, so why would I go out and find somebody else?
So I have actually got some of those players who I think could play a 35-game season and hence might be a better short-term option while we have this massive squad overhaul.
Okay.
Now, this is just my shortlist. I've actually got Upamecano and Milinkovic as my two sort of, I've sounded them out as my best options. But Vertonghen is going on a free at the end of the season, as is David Luiz, as is Diego Godin. Now, I was debating whether Bayern could go for someone like Joe Gomez for a large fee, but probably not worth it for the money that Liverpool would demand. Also, Vallejo, want to keep one eye on his development at Real Madrid and his minutes at Real Madrid as well. So we could always bring in a Vertonghen or a Luiz with an Upamecano or Milinkovic.
I think that it's really important that we start turning over a younger side and just refreshing it.
Well, my worry as well is that we're going to have to give them a longer contract than just letting Boateng's contract run down to 2021, and they're going to be big on a higher wage because they're coming on a free. That's why I'm kind of in favour of keeping Boateng.
So
unless PSG come back for like 40 mil, in which case they're welcome to it.
But even if they were, I would rather replace with a 21-year-old to freshen up and play as an understudy to Hummels / rotating with Hummels alongside Sula than I would bring in a 29-year-old Vertonghen.
So if PSG come back in for Boateng and we sell, we can pick up a Vertonghen or a Luiz.
Yeah.
But if the situation remains the same, I think we probably opt for, out of the defenders, Upamecano.
Ooh,
however, that is
money.
50 to 60 burnt, I'd say.
I think maybe even more than that.
Just for the sake of this podcast.
Okay, we'll say 50 to 60.
50.
I think that's
60
kind.
60 mil. Okay.
Interesting.
Okay. Right.
Midfielders, is it?
So let's move on. Yes. Two midfielders. Joe, you're up first.
For me, in this position, there was only one name that stood out and stood out quite clearly for me. I did have a look at the likes of Alan, but we've talked about him before. I thought Alan would have been a great option. I also think they probably will bring in Aaron Ramsey, in which case you might not need such an attacking midfielder, which kind of played a bit of a role in my thinking. But equally, I've gone for Marcelo Brozovic.
Ooh, okay.
I like it.
Now, I like Brozovic, 26 years old. Just turned 26 as well, by the way, last month. Contract until 2022, but 2 days ago, his agent did reveal he has a €60 million release clause, which I would be very tempted to pay if I was any top European club, because this guy is an absolute monster. Mm-hmm. He can play in three or four different positions. He can play defensive mid, centre mid, attacking mid.
He can
drift off the right. He can play as a 10. He's just so dynamic. I think he started something like 14 games as a DM so far this season.
And he played as a 6 at the World Cup as well. Yeah, he was the deepest midfielder there.
He can play and do absolutely everything you need, which I think is part of the reason I would take him at Bayern, because I think even though you've only asked for one centre mid, they could do with a few that potentially fill gaps for them.
Yeah.
Because Thiago is so injury prone. I don't really trust Renato Sanchez yet with that berth. James leaves in the summer unless they agree to that clause. I think they could potentially need two in there. But Marcelo Brozovic, for me, is a madness. I looked at some of his stats this season. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. He's averaging 8 accurate long balls per 90.
Jesus.
Across 14 starts this season, 90% pass accuracy, over 2 key passes, 1.8 dribbles, and 4.7 tackles and interceptions.
Oh my God.
He has suddenly turned. I don't know what they've been feeding him in the summer. I don't know how many steroids he's been injecting, but he's suddenly turned into the Hulk.
He's an amazing progressive passer as well. He's not a kind of. It's not just sideways passes that bring him up to 90% accuracy. Like, he's so progressive.
And also, you look at Thiago's injury record, and Thiago is definitely one of the most progressive passers in the world.
Yeah.
In terms of ball line splitting passes, there's very few.
I think he's first in Europe.
I think he's probably number one.
For dribbles and passes into the final third.
For me, because of his injury record, Brozovic would be adequate, if not on the same level cover as Thiago Alcantara, as a ball-splitting defensive midfielder. He can dribble from the centre of the park. He creates chances when he plays as a 10 or an attacking midfielder. He can slot in on the right-hand side and offers you another option as a right winger. He's just the all-round package. And at €60 million, it's a buyout clause. This is a no-brainer for me, if I was Bayern Munich.
60 mil buyout clause. Interesting. Let me just note that down, Joseph.
€60 million as well. So
60 million euros. Just on the subject of Renato Sanchez, it does seem like the long-term injury to Corentin Tolisso has breathed new life into him.
Yeah, man. And he looks much better.
I remember Benfica B manager Helder Cristal saying that Renato needs affection, and apparently he's getting that now under Kovac. So it's been quite a transition. Hauled off at half-time against Chelsea, obviously. Misplaced 7 passes in one half of football. Also passed on advertising board in the Carabao Cup, infamously.
But equally, he's nowhere near the level of a Brozovic.
His numbers are not that great this season.
But he's had some standout performances, which suggest there's more to come.
He's scored a goal. I mean, like,
he's also young.
If you look at his numbers, his dribbles are the only thing that stand out. And yeah, I probably send him out on loan next season. I don't sell him, but I worry about him. His defensive numbers have gone down a lot from what they used to be. His attacking numbers are almost non-existent, except for his shots, which are mostly from outside the box.
I'd be keen to develop him as a 21-year-old at the club. I think he could still... I could still become the player we all thought he was going to be when he won the Golden Boy Award.
But you're not going to win the Champions League with Renato Sanchez in your central midfield.
Such a regressive year at Swansea. Yeah, 0 shots on target in 15 games.
Mad. But he's no. Let's not even put him in the same breath as a player like Brozovic. Yeah,
Brozovic, I like that. Excellent pitch. Seems to be one of the most well-rounded midfielders in Europe right now.
Definitely.
Which Inter definitely need. Heavily reliant on him, aren't they? Who's your retort to Brozovic?
Oh, I kind of like Brozovic, you know. I thought about Brozovic and decided against him because I wanted to spend money elsewhere. And to me, what Thiago is destined to become is a six. Like, Thiago played as a six under Guardiola, and it seems to me like he's ideally suited, as he loses a bit of mobility, to be the deepest midfielder. He's great at evading pressure. He's great at controlling play. He's an excellent passer. Big defensive output. To me, he's what I want Pjanic to be. I think that when Thiago plays as a six, he's the best possible version of Pjanic. And kind of similar to Xabi Alonso, but more mobile, I'd say. So I think that Thiago is ultimately going to play that position. So I've actually gone for a more attacking midfielder because I'm worried that Bayern are going to let Rodriguez go. Like, and firstly, I would not do that. I would absolutely try and keep James Rodriguez because I mean, he's the only actual outstanding creator at Bayern at the moment. The only one.
He's the most creative player by far. Only one achieving over 2 key passes a game.
Yeah, and he's completing 3.5.
Also, like, which great is absolutely... for that commercial revenue across South America.
Well, plus he can actually fill in on the right. Like, he doesn't do it as much as he used to, but people forget that he made his name. He got his big move to Monaco playing on the right. So, I don't know. I think about him. I also had... So what I've gone for is a more attacking midfielder, somebody with big creative output.
Okay.
Because I want a midfield three of Thiago, Tolisso, and this guy. I think Sanchez can step in, Goretzka can step in. I thought about Christian Eriksen, you know. He's got 18 months left on his contract.
Yes, I knew you were going to say that.
That's a year in the summer. I still think he's going to cost 60 mil plus. And I worked from the front backwards when I did my list. So I spent all my money up top. So I've decided not to go for him. But if I have a word with Levy, and if Levy's interested, if Levy has a nibble at 60 mil, I'd definitely go for Eriksen.
If that stadium takes any fucking longer,
yeah,
he might have to.
You know what? I sign Ramsey on a free and then I swap him for Eriksen. I'll happily do that. I'd also look at Brace Mendes at Celta at the absolute other end of the kind of...
Please educate me on him. Never heard of him.
He's a 21-year-old. He got his debut for Spain the other day and he scored the winner against Bosnia. And he looks absolutely fantastic. I mean, so far this season, 3 tackles and interceptions a game. That's nothing special, but it's fine. 3 shots with 1.8 inside the box, which is about the same as you get from a Coutinho or an Asensio. 2.7 chances created per 90 this season. 21. And also, you're thinking Spanish attacking midfielder. You're thinking 5'7". He's 6'2".
Great Odin's Ooh. Raven.
So I'm interested, but I've decided to go to Spain and I've gone for Pablo Fornals.
You do like this guy.
You love this guy.
Pablo Fornals is unbelievable.
But is he really Bayern Munich caliber?
Yes. Yes, Barcelona, which Barcelona tried to get him.
Have you seen the highlight reels on
I
Twitter?
Have seen his dribble.
Oh my God, the dribbles.
Twinkle toes.
Yeah, I've seen the highlight reels.
Guy oozes gold.
And I actually worry about Bayern at the moment. The number of people they have in the squad with the ability to bring the ball forward at their feet has diminished. Like, no Robin, no Ribery, no Vidal. So they're pretty much left with Thiago. He's their only decent dribbler left in the squad. So I think Brozovic fills that to some extent. Yeah. And I think Pablo Fornals does as well. But fundamentally, he's just an amazing creator and he's 22 years old. He's fifth in La Liga for expected assists this season so far. He's behind 2 Barcelona players, Messi and Jordi Alba. 2 Sevilla players, Jesus Navas and Pablo Sarabia. And bearing in mind he's doing that at Villarreal, who are currently 16th and they're 14th for goals scored. So they're doing almost nothing. Fornals is doing a really good job. Last year, 3 goals, 12 assists in, I think, 2,600 minutes. He was joint top for assists with Messi and Suarez. So this is not a fluke. He is a very, very good creator. He's taking more shots, making more chances than ever, completes a couple of dribbles, about 3 tackles and interceptions a game. In fact, up to 4 in the Europa League, 22. And most excitingly of all, €30 million release clause. Arsenal apparently interested, want to go for him in January. If Arsenal, if Arsenal are your rivals and you're Bayern Munich, you're getting him.
So it's Fornals for 30.
I just think it's a very good price for an outstanding young player. Wherever he goes, he's going to be good. Atletico Madrid and Barcelona have both kind of registered an interest in him, and Arsenal are certainly interested, Liverpool as well. So if I were Bayern Munich, I say we're going to get you in and you're going to be our Eriksen.
Very dependent on James Rodriguez staying or going though, right?
Yeah, though I think that even if Rodriguez stays...
Because his buyback clause is 35 or 38 million euros.
35 million euros to make it permanent, yes. Rodriguez. But even if he stays, I would keep Fornals because Rodriguez, he does have his injury problems. And if he is injured and Thiago's gradually moving deeper, or say Thiago's injured as well, which is not out of the question, I think that I want somebody who's capable of creating. Plus, it allows you to maybe rest Rodriguez for Champions League games and not really see a diminution in quality.
And I presume we're all saying we don't quite hold Goretzka to the level that...
I mean, he's underwhelmed at the start of this season.
I think
season.
He's underwhelming. I completely agree.
I mean, he's better than Sanchez currently.
Yeah, but equally, he's more advanced in his development than Sanchez.
Sure. He's a year or two older, but I mean, I wouldn't have got... He was free, so I guess you bring him in, but I really
He's
didn't.
A classic Brazzo signing.
I really don't
him
like
and him. And Wagner, bring him in, bargain basement.
He's not, but he might be Bayern quality in a year or two, but he certainly isn't at the moment. I really don't understand it. I really pissed somebody off by saying this. Like, a kid got really arsey with me on Twitter where he was like, oh, I think he had a fantastic season last year. And I was like, go back and look at his numbers. They're fucking tragic.
It reeks of Sebastian Rudy.
Yeah.
They could sell him on in a year's time for €20 million profit.
Yeah.
To another Champions League or a Europa League side in Germany or elsewhere. So I think he was a little bit of squad padding. Like, mm-hmm. He has redeemable features, doesn't he? But I've also kind of spotted the same weaknesses, the same as you guys, basically, in that we need a bit of ball progression in there, need a bit of a goal threat as well, especially if James returns to Real Madrid. So we'll talk about the long-term heirs to Robin and Ribery after this, and I'll go through their numbers and sort of their decline and what output needs to be replaced. But my midfield options that I brought to the table were Rakitic, who I think is massively underappreciated at Barcelona, obviously 30 years old, so this will be very dependent on the fee that we could buy him for. And if we revert it to a 3-1-4-2, I think his defensive industry and his ability to progress the ball into the final third could be extremely valuable over a 1-2 year period. He's not a long-term option, but I thought maybe worth a punt. His build-up, expected build-up play is 0.65 per 90, which is better than Toni Kroos, better than Jorginho and Fernandinho. So okay. When this guy is in possession, it normally ends very well.
But he's 30.
For his team.
And I'd have just kept Vidal. There's nothing Rakitic is good at that Vidal isn't better at.
Well, I don't necessarily think they should have sold Vidal.
Yeah, Vidal was a horrible sale.
Well, it looks worse because Tolisso got injured, right? But I think, especially if they're not sure about James Rodriguez, getting rid of Vidal is crazy.
And I also thought Koke. Now, my...
he's going to cost you an absolute fuck ton.
Arm and a leg, yes. All that, very eloquently put. Tactical flexibility, good all-rounder, almost three tackles and interceptions a game, exceptional at chance creation as well, 2.3 key passes per 90, about the same as David Silva.
I would like to see how many of those come from open play though, because he takes a lot of set pieces.
He does take free kicks.
And that worries me.
And when I was also considering Atletico Madrid players, and I looked at him and Saul Niguez, although Saul is locked down to a 9-year contract, Saul is,
that is, what put me off.
Significantly...
Yeah, I think we'd all recommend Saul for literally any club in the world, but you're never getting him out of that.
And then the shortlist, which was Amadou Diawara, Ruben Neves, Dennis Geiger, who's an interesting player from Hoffenheim, Hector Herrera, whose contract is up, another short-term solution again, is 30 years old, and James Milner, whose contract is up in the summer. So I knew you guys would bring big hitters to the table, long-term options. These are pretty much... complementary options, secondary guys that may do the job, may see us over, ties over in this difficult period that I envisage from 2019 to 2021.
I think that that player, the one that you're talking about in the free transfer market, is going to be Aaron Ramsey.
Yeah, he's probably the best guy you're going to get in the transfer market.
I think that
we've already spoken about him on previous episodes.
So we're not going to talk about him, but I think that will be Aaron Ramsey. In a similar aspect, I think Benjamin Pavard will be coming through.
You know, I'd happily say that you should go for Brozovic if it weren't for the fact that you've massively overspent on Upamecano. So my worry is that we're going to end up spending 450 million euros.
Do you not, Chris Hemmler, whatever your name was? I actually think Hermel. I actually think you should take both of these options. I think you should take a 30 million punt on young talent from Spain, and I think you should take a more significant punt on a Croatian from Italy.
So are we happy? Maybe we can call Fornals as the wild card, because I actually don't have a wild card down.
I don't have a wild card either, and I would like to call Fornals as the wild card.
Fornals is the wild card. It's locked in. This is a democracy. He is the wild card, especially for 30 million euros, and we will take Brozovic again from my shortlist, from the free transfers. Guys, let us know on Twitter who you'd take as a complimentary freebie in the same way as the defenders. I'm sure we can make some savvy signings as well as the big money move. So at the minute, we've got Upamecano, we've got Brozovic, and we've jumped the gun on our wild card. We've gone for Fornals, so we don't have to visit that at the end. It's looking pretty good so far, gentlemen.
It's not bad.
I'm really impressed with your work.
I like it.
Okay.
We're moving to the most crucial positions.
Yeah.
On the team, though.
And now we're on to long-term heirs, to Robin and Ribery. Now, let's provide a bit of context again. Robin only made over 20 starts in the league three times since 2009-10. I mean, pretty devastating in two or three of those seasons when he has been on the pitch. But Ribery not made over 20 appearances domestically since 2012-13. Okay, so this all points towards why haven't they been replaced earlier. And Serge Gnabry has been the only real move in that regard, I guess, as well as Kingsley Coman, who we tend to forget about because he's had such bad injury problems in the last 2 years. And if he was back, no doubt he would be lining up in that midfield. Okay,
but I think you've got to kind of, for the purposes of this, we've got to say that Kingsley at this stage of his career is now a rotation option. Those knees, just we can't count him.
It's very much in the balance.
I mean,
that's,
I've
so
made,
significant.
I've done my recruitment kind of on the understanding that we've got Gnabry, we've got Coman, and we've got Alphonso Davies coming in. So I've gone for one like kind of starting quality winger, and another who's starting quality, but is not the kind of guy where we're paying so much money he has to play every game. You know what I mean?
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, so Robin Ribery's numbers in a little bit more detail. Well, so key passes, they've kind of been able to sustain them. Admittedly, sample size is small this season. Robin still on 1.8 per game, Ribery on 1.1, but Ribery yet to contribute to a goal or an assist, and his take on percentage is way down. Dribbles have dropped through the roof. So Ribery was looking at about 4 in 15-16. It's 1.8 this season. Robin hitting heights of 3 around 16-17, 0.6 this season. So we're looking for not just goal scorers, but people that... And this is more prevalent under Pep Guardiola, wasn't it? When they were switching wings, when they were using wingers to smash crosses into the box and pick up that second ball. But we're looking for wingers who can do it, or wingers and creators. Now, is Serge Gnabry good enough to replace either of those, especially Robin down the right-hand side? This season, not bad in terms of goal contributions. 6 starts, 1 goal and 2 assists, but only 0.5 key passes a game, 0.4 crosses, which is the same as 35-year-old Ribery and less than 34-year-old Robin. So, gentlemen, wingers, we've arrived. Koeman's injured. Mm-hmm. Gnabry's not good enough. Who went first in the last section?
I did shoot, Pat.
So it's back over to Pato.
Okay, right. Well, my right winger, though to be honest, they're interchangeable, but I've gone for him as a right winger. I've gone for Ousmane Dembele.
You can't.
You can't not. There's a rumour that he's available for 100 million euros. If he is, even if you have to pay the full 130 Barca paid, pay it.
Do we believe that?
Does he go to Liverpool as well?
I don't know if he did. Why? Why would he go to Liverpool
if Bayern are available? Far more cash.
I don't know. But I don't know if they actually could.
If it's sustainable.
If Bayern wanted to offer more, they absolutely could. Yeah. And I don't know what they're currently paying Ribery and Robben, because they keep their wages very close to their chest. But I don't know, Sport, who obviously are Barcelona's official mouthpiece, they're saying he needs to change his lifestyle or be sold. They had an op-ed from the weekend where they said we should never have bought him. He was never the right guy for us. It's really kind of toxic. And if he's available for 100 million euros, I think you have to go for him, because he is the best winger in the world that you can get. I think for me, if I think about the best young wingers around, I think Sterling's not really a winger anymore, but Sterling, Sané, Martial, and Ousmane Dembélé. And I think Ousmane Dembélé is probably the easiest to get of all of those potentially.
100
potentially.
Mil. Right. So we'd have to sanction a couple of sales for that.
Oh, well, I'm
happy to sell Kingsley Coman and Gnabry.
I think we can sell other things. I think that we don't actually need to sell.
Have a cake and eat it, lads.
I think we don't need to sell that many people.
Let's get rid of
our budget?
25 million for Goretzka. Let's get rid of Gnabry for 25.
Javi Martinez for 10.
10 for Javi. There's 60.
I'd keep Gnabry.
Come on.
Okay, so at this point we've spent 90. We've spent about 150.
I'd be thinking about selling Lewandowski.
Ooh, or Thomas Muller.
I would happily sell Thomas Muller.
Okay, yeah. So we'll talk about selling Thomas Muller when we get to the centre forward.
Thomas Muller's on my hit list big time.
Yeah same. Oh, 100%.
Get out of the club.
People at home, though,
he'll never
some
leave.
Of our listeners will not understand our decision to sell Thomas
and he'll
Muller.
And he'll
never leave. Still
he'll
very much
never
in
leave. He'll spend his whole career there.
We'll move on to that rationale in the centre forwards. Okay. But Thomas Muller, for the sake of bringing Ousmane Dembele in, like, considering that as a legit argument,
fuck him off.
It would mean Thomas Muller is given Das Boot. And yeah, I'd happily sanction that move. Joe, your winger?
I mean, Ousmane Dembele is very hard to compete with, isn't it? So from my right, since you picked a right winger as well, my right wing option, I've gone for Leon Bailey.
Ooh, mostly played off the left.
And he was number one for most successful dribbles on the left-hand side of the pitch in the Bundesliga last season.
But how many dribbles did he actually complete per game? Because it was not that high.
It wasn't that high.
Whereas Ousmane Dembele, he's incredibly at his lowest high. It's ever been at the moment, 2. And at Dortmund, it was 4.5. At Rennes, it was 5
yeah,
a game.
Yeah, which is ridiculous, and I completely agree with you. But let me make some defence of Leon Bailey as a capture in this side. So he is under contract until 2022, but he's earning just 7 grand a week at Leverkusen, which is pittance for a 20-year-old of his calibre. And do you know what? I'm going to go out and say it. This guy is Iron Robin 2.0, but being played on the wrong side. I think he needs to be shifted onto the right-hand side. He is so deadly with his left foot. Players cannot cope with Leon Bailey on his left foot.
So you transform
him
into an inverted winger.
He has occasionally played on the right. He operates mainly on the left, but occasionally he has played on the right. He actually, I've got written down here, he was in and amongst the top 5 for dribbles into the box by any player in Europe last season.
Wow.
Now, although his dribble pass players isn't particularly high. His dribbling in really good areas is good. He was third in the Bundesliga for possessions that led to a shot last season, which is really good for Leverkusen, for a Leverkusen player. He had the third most accurate crosses in the entire league. He was the top of the Bundesliga for carries, which is distance covered between receiving a pass and the next action. So he is great in transition on the counter, and that's obviously not something that Bayern are going to specialise in, but on that right-hand side, cutting in from the left, I think he was had the third most successful dribbles per 90 of any player on the right-hand side of the pitch last season.
I mean, it's
good.
Bayer
Leverkusen.
It's good.
And
I think you have to look at him.
The reason I think you have to look at him is because if you don't, another super club is gonna. It sounds stupid, but if you don't, if Bayern were
very close to signing, weren't they?
As
in the summer,
as Bayern Munich, if you don't pick up Leon Bailey, you know that Real Madrid or Man City are going to.
He feels like much more of a Bayern Munich signing than Ousmane Dembele at this point.
Ooh, interesting.
He's going to cost a lot, though. Under contract for 2022, Leverkusen are not going to let him go for
that's cheap. The thing. I think if you're going to spend anywhere over 50 mil for Leon Bailey, I don't know why you wouldn't just put down 100 mil for Ousmane Dembele.
I would probably agree. But I have to say, I think Leon Bailey played on the right-hand side is going to be a devastating player.
My worry is how useful he is, given that we've never seen him play on a top side. And I do think that is a big transition. When you're playing for a top side, you're usually facing set defences. And the question is not how good a dribbler you are in space, it's how good a dribbler you are in very tight areas. And that's where I think Ousmane Dembele has shone. And last season, I think he was third in La Liga for key passes per game with 2.7, and he didn't take any. He didn't take any set pieces, and he didn't have a good season by all accounts.
Statistically, we're not going to beat Ousmane Dembele. Statistically, is a freak, isn't he? He's a player that is unfathomably good at dribbling.
He'd really enjoy the Bundesliga as well. I was listening to I can't remember the name of the podcast.
Well, he did, didn't he?
When pretty
he
was fascinating in that they say the Bundesliga is very one-on-one.
Yeah,
and individual battles, and he would relish that.
He was amazing. He was amazing at Dortmund. He's been since he debuted for Rennes back in 2015. Mm-hmm. He's been involved in a goal every 113 minutes across his entire career. To put that in context, Coutinho went to Barcelona last season, and everyone says he's been brilliant since. He's been involved in a goal every 117 minutes at Barcelona.
So
I just omitted him.
That's interesting.
At Dortmund from my mind before you said that.
Yeah,
go on, carry on.
Like I completely agree with Ousmane. I think if you've got the option to get Ousmane, you get Ousmane. But what I will say is they need Robin and they need Ribery. And Ousmane can play off both flanks. He could dovetail lovely with Leon Bailey.
If you can swap wingers, I think that's a real weapon
to
have.
So do I, which is part of the reason I've gone for my other option as a left winger.
Who's your other
I will
option?
Just quickly dive into him.
Yeah.
Christian Pulisic.
Ooh. Okay.
Now, Christian Pulisic contract up in 18 months, so not going to cost as much as Leon Bailey, definitely not going to cost as much as Ousmane Dembele, although he is going to cost more to get out of Dortmund because of the prevalence of the sales that have happened between Dortmund and Bayern, in my
opinion.
Because
of the Bayern tax. Yeah,
because of the Bayern tax. He has really played in all three positions across the front line for Dortmund, but predominantly on the left-hand side, last season anyway.
Yeah, playing a bit more on the right this season.
This
I think,
season, he has played
of
much
Sancho
more on the right.
Brun Larsen.
Exactly. But I actually remember watching Pulisic. I've only ever seen him once in the flesh, and it was against Tottenham Hotspur at Wembley. And he was so much better than any other Dortmund player on that day.
Really?
And, I mean, he was admittedly playing in a same starting 11 as the likes of Yarmolenko. But the level in calibre between him and a player like Yarmolenko was frightening. He actually doesn't have the best stats.
Is he even 20 yet?
He is 21.
Oh, God.
So
older than I thought.
I was looking at his stats, and you know what? He's fairly middling for his stats across the Bundesliga. He doesn't stand out in any one regard. But when I started to dig a bit deeper, his off-the-ball movement, and he is so exceptional, and his ability to lead a press is so telling that I think, a bit like Leon Bailey, if you don't take him, another top side is going to take him.
Yeah, he's got all the talent in the world. The thing is, I think with Pulisic, a lot of the stuff wouldn't show up in stats we could find
it
online.
Doesn't.
Who scored?
Exactly.
I think that if we had access to more advanced stuff, you know, like progressive passes and things like that, I think you'd see a lot from Pulisic because he does a lot of that this season. Gives the ball to Sancho. Sancho plays the killer ball.
And I also read an article where it detailed defensive contributions off the ball, and Pulisic was one of the leading candidates going forward in the whole of Europe.
Pressing movements. And,
yeah, he was one of the best. He was one of the top 10, I believe, in the whole of Europe last season. So it's hard to quantify, but I think Christian Pulisic is going to be a superstar, and it's whether or not you take the risk while he's only got 18 months left on his contract to try and move on him either in January or next. When he's got a year left on his contract, you're getting him out there for sub 60, 50.
I forgot about his contract situation.
2020 is nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of pitched for Pulisic on continental clubs, so we're kind of in tandem in that regard. I mean, he's certainly more appealing than Leon Bailey, I think, and there is a feeling that Pulisic's output is going to become supercharged once he's played correctly and maybe playing for a different team. Kind of Jadon Sancho is overshadowing him this season, isn't he? Ousmane Dembele for 100. I think Pulisic, if he was picked up in January, this January would still be 75 mil.
But you're going to need two wingers.
Next summer, maybe less so. I think you could probably only go for a Pulisic and a Leon Bailey, or an Ousmane Dembele and Leon Bailey. Otherwise, we are really having our cake.
I actually think Leon Bailey will cost more than Pulisic.
In the summer,
actually,
sure.
He's got 3 years longer
in the summer, maybe. I mean, that's why my other kind of cheaper option was a bit more of a gamble.
Go on
the left wing. I went for Yannick Carrasco.
Back from China?
Yeah. I think
from the dead.
He's still playing for the
same reception to my Rakitic pitch.
He's still playing for the national team. And I think he probably looks at Axel Witsel and thinks, I fucked up going to China. And when you look at his numbers in Europe, they were unbelievable. Like his dribbles, it was always three or four dribbles a game, pretty much without fail, over three shots a game throughout his career.
Was he a wanker though?
Well, I think he was a wanker at Atletico Madrid, but I think it was difficult at Atletico Madrid because he wasn't a starter. And we've seen this happen with Correa as well. Mm. And it makes me think that the issue is not so much the player, though I think he is a bit of a dick, but with the way that Simeone approaches rotation.
The rotation in those positions.
Because he was seen as a star at Monaco and no one had an issue then. And his numbers are unreal. I mean, last season, everyone was like, he's terrible, we're going to sell him. He had 3 goals, 4 assists in 900 minutes, 14 goals and assists the season before. He's only 26 next September.
That's absurd.
And I think you could probably get him. He went for 30 million euros. So I reckon you could maybe get him for 35, 40. And I think that would be pretty good money for a player of his calibre. And I think also sometimes there are players who dick around until they get to a top club because they want that big move. And then once they get to a top club, they knuckle down. Like when Ousmane Dembele was skipping training because he wanted to go to Barca, none of us said, he's a dick, don't sign him.
Aubameyang was doing that as well.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, well,
but now he's doing
slight,
it at Barca.
That's a slightly different situation.
Right. Let's, I think, sanction Dembele and revisit Pulisic after we've talked about our forward line.
Okay.
See if there's a bit of cash going for Pulisic as well.
Gonna have no cash after my boy.
Yeah.
And definitely none after yours if you've gone for the player. I think
yours is
gone
more
for.
Expensive than mine.
No,
I'd
he's
say.
Not.
Yes, he
no,
is.
He's not. No, he's not.
Yes, he is.
No, he's
not. Right, let's lay the foundations for why or what we need in a centre forward at Bayern Munich, because Lewandowski's aging well, isn't he? He's only missed 11 Bundesliga games since he joined Bayern. Like I said earlier, currently on 7 and 10 behind Jovic, Player, Alcacer, Royce and Sebastian Haller. However, his shot numbers are down. 18-19, so this season he's taking 3.4 shots per game, his second lowest while at Bayern Munich, only two inside the box. So to give you a little bit of an idea of the decline, and it's been gradual, 15-16, almost five shots per game, 16-17, 4.3, 17-18, 4.2, and it's kind of followed that pattern inside the box, 3.4, 3.1, 2.9. So he's been truly elite in this period and one of the few strikers across Europe that has sustained five shots per game. However, owing to this gradual decline, I think he needs a more efficient second striker behind him, or we bring in these wingers who are going to keep generating higher quality chances for him because his supply lines have been cut, haven't they?
I do think, though, that we need to take numbers like that with a pinch of salt when Pep Guardiola has been managing the team in that time period. Because I feel like his teams, especially that Bayern Munich team, was so dominant, he is going to be getting more shots off. Whereas when he's in a struggling Carlo Ancelotti side, he's going to be getting less off.
But they weren't struggling in the first season. And they were barely struggling when he left. Carlo Ancelotti left with a 70% win ratio.
Yeah, but their output did go down.
But
ability to get shots in the box, I'd say like that is Pep's specialty and everyone's numbers go through the roof. But on the other hand, like I'm not really sure like what numbers you want us to take with a pinch of salt. Like, I mean, well, are you saying that he's better now than we think he is?
My pinch of salt is that you definitely should be not considering selling him. No, nowhere near.
I'm not considering selling it.
He's considering selling
it. I don't care. But what I think that highlights is that he's aging out, but he's aging out in a very nice, sustainable way. Mm-hmm. But basically, if we want to win the Champions League, we can't have Thomas Muller scoring five goals behind him.
Well, that's because Thomas Muller's crap.
I mean, crap is strong. Strong.
He's not a striker. He's not a winger. He's not an attacking midfielder. Like, that's my problem with Thomas Muller.
Oh, that great word.
But even that's not like a position. That's just like a, that's like a sort of like explanation of why he doesn't have a position.
Right.
Oh, God.
So, and I actually didn't give you my wingers, which were, I'm not going to revisit them in great detail, because again, only here to pick, really. But Leroy Sané, who we've spoken about a lot before, 10 appearances this season, 5 from the bench, though, less minutes than Mahrez, a goal contribution every 83.8 minutes. We've all said that we don't necessarily see him as a long-term Pep player, so he might be available for 60 to 70 million.
Get him.
I would definitely take him over... I would take
him at 60 or 70. Yeah, I'd take him
over pretty much anyone.
I would take him over Bailey. I'd take him over Pulisic. Not necessarily take him over Ousmane Dembele. And Thorgan Hazard, although I do feel he's experiencing a purple patch. Might be quite a savvy signing, though. 11 goal contributions in 11 starts. Playing very well for Belgium as well. Would probably be not too inexpensive signing.
Buy-in tax, you never know.
Yeah, it'd be all right.
But
no, Bayern do all right, don't they? Buying out the Bundesliga.
Yeah, but only when they.
It's like the opposite. It's like the opposite of a tax.
That definitely applies when they're buying players from Dortmund. But I think the rest of the Bundesliga, happy to take their money. Okay, so Lewandowski, we've gone over his numbers. I don't want to sell him. I want a striker that complements him. However, Patrick Van Straten, you're going to convince me that we should sell him. But we're starting with Joe's option.
Starting with my option, and like you said, Robert Lewandowski for me has to remain as a starter, so I'm looking at someone who can play just off him.
But then if you've gone for who you've gone for, it makes no sense.
Why?
It makes no sense to play this person with Lewandowski.
But Lewandowski definitely going to be rotated in and out of the side, isn't it?
Okay, so you don't want to play this guy off Lewandowski. You're going to say to this person, okay, you start like what, all the Bundesliga games?
I'm going to say to this person, you're playing probably as a left winger for the first three seasons of your career at this club, and then you're going to operate as my striker.
Okay.
I think I know you've gone for now.
I'm all right with that.
Yeah, so he's not going to come in and replace Lewandowski. He's going to come in probably on the left-hand side of a front three, and then as time ages on, he's going to replace Lewandowski. It is Anthony Martial.
Hold on. Before you explain why, you want to bring Leon Bailey in, where's Leon Bailey playing if you bring in Tony Martial? And Tony Martial's playing on the left for 3 years.
Well, I didn't realise we were also bringing in Ousmane Dembele. So my ideal front line would have been Lewandowski as a spearhead, either Christian Pulisic or Leon Bailey and Martial.
Okay, so Leon Bailey.
But Ousmane's come in.
Have to play on the right.
So now we're talking Ousmane Dembele, Lewandowski and Martial as a front three.
Okay.
That's
interesting.
Would be my
Dembele can play on both sides, so it's not really an issue.
But Martial can only really play on that.
Yeah, but that's fine. You play Dembele on the right, play Martial on the left.
22 years old. Obviously, we know about Anthony Martial. I'm not going to go into great detail about him. Out of contract in 2019. So he has got 6 months left on his current deal. But there is the option to extend for another year. However, that doesn't stop clubs talking to him in January and pre-agreeing contracts, meaning he can leave.
Okay.
So I think you can get Tony Martial out for, when I say a relatively cheap amount, I'm still talking 60, 70, 80 because it's Man United will demand big fees. But I think that's okay, man. I actually think that's okay. I think I would, I don't have a problem with that. He's the ceiling level on Anthony Martial. I can't stress enough how high it is. If he was in a team that could attack, he's doing things at Manchester United in a team where all we do is defend single-handedly. He's still putting up nearly 3 dribbles per 90 from wide areas.
Imagine a world in which Bayern Munich have Coman, Dembele and Martial at the club. That would be unbelievable.
Martial, the reason that I've bought
one
him...
One of those doesn't make the national side.
Not with Griezmann.
And leaves within a year.
But I do feel like Martial, when he gets towards the back end of his career, or at least ages up, I actually think he probably will be an extremely elite striker. His finishing is just so clinical.
Yeah.
He takes shots from great areas. So I'll pitch Anthony Martial as a left winger to start, but phasing out Lewandowski for Anthony Martial.
Mainly bringing him in for his sang-froid. Pato. Sorry, gentlemen, before we continue, before I make my decision around the forward line, what system do you envisage playing? Because we've spoken about a 3-1-4-2, we've spoken about a 3-4-3, and the gold standard, obviously, and for possession-based football, is still 4-3-3.
So for me, this would be mine. 4-2-3-1 with Thiago and, Thiago / Brozovic rotating with Tolisso in the midfield.
Mm-hmm.
And then Martial on the left, Usman on the right, James in the hole, just off of Robert Lewandowski.
I'm assuming we're letting James go because okay, I just think they're going to do that.
If that's the case, then you can easily play.
I think I'd go 4-3-3, but I mean, I don't think I think it's a bit outdated to have a formation that is our natural go to. Like I think we play. Ideally, you want a manager to mix and match based on what comes up. I mean, my worry is that they've never really played in a three at the back except a little bit under Pep. Hummels can do it. I mean, people can do it there, but it's not really my dream just because the team is not used to it. So that's a little bit of a concern. So yeah, I probably go 4-3-3, but I think 4-3-3 often turns into 4-2-3-1.
Yeah, I'm the exact same.
Like Pep said, they're mainly just phone numbers, but for the sake of kind of making, you know, these transfer decisions, it is very useful. I'm kind of drawing out the lineup now. Okay, so who's your centre forward replacement if you're selling Lewandowski?
Well, if you want someone to be a backup to Lewandowski, I don't think you're going to do better than Martial. Like, because the only way you're going to get a player who's Bayern Munich quality but keep them happy is if you can play them in a different position.
Yeah.
So Martial is really your only option
as the left wing.
If you're keeping Lewandowski, you have to go for Martial because you're not going to get a high quality striker to come in and be backup. I don't even know if Luka Jovic is going to come in and be backup to Lewandowski.
There's very few talented wingers who could also play naturally as a nine.
Yeah.
Like, you look at the likes of Ousmane Dembele, Leon Bailey, Pulisic, Leroy Sané, right? None of them could be a nine. Whereas Tony Martial, he's both operated as a nine at Monaco and under LVG, is an extremely clinical finisher, and his defensive work rate leaves a lot to be desired, I'll be honest.
And they want a real nine. Like, this is the thing. Like, a lot of wingers, if you try and play them up front, they don't play like nines. This is why somebody like, say, Martial or Dries Mertens is unusual, because Dries Mertens is not a false nine and never has been. He's a proper striker. He plays like a striker. He is on the pitch is like a striker, and that's what Martial does.
And your pick is very much a proper striker.
My pick was Timo Werner, because if you're going to get a striker, he's the only sensible option. I mean, Luka Jovic, they should have got last summer, which is what they were thinking about doing, and they didn't. And I think that was unwise. That's the only way they could have got somebody in to be the backup to Lewandowski, if they'd got him soon enough. As it is, I think, again, my thing with selling Lewandowski is, if you can get good money for him. And there was a rumour that Real Madrid wanted him in the summer and Pini Zahavi was trying to get him out. This is according to the Football League stories reported by Der Spiegel, that Pini Zahavi was trying to get him out to Real Madrid, and Real Madrid were willing to spend upwards of 100 mil. And I think if you can get somewhere near 100 mil for Lewandowski, that's absolutely worth taking, especially if you're bringing in players like Ousmane Dembele, like potentially Martial, like Bailey, like Pulisic, whoever it is on the wing. I worry far less about getting rid of Lewandowski. Whereas at the moment, Lewandowski is kind of keeping their heads above water.
I feel like if Real Madrid were going to go in... Well, it was last year, wasn't it? Last year was Lewandowski's chance to force the move to Real Madrid, and I feel like he kind of tried his best, but they're holding out, well, for Neymar, which we've discussed before. I don't know if they go back in for Lewandowski for 100 mil,
do
they?
Neither do I, but if they do, I absolutely sell him. Like this is what it always comes down to. If somebody will pay the money for him, you definitely, definitely sell him. Or if Chelsea are interested, which they apparently were. If somebody's going to pay the money for him, it's moronic to keep him at this point because he is declining and he's only going to do that more. Like, so from my point of view, I go and get a striker, and the best young striker around is Timo Werner.
Yeah, I mean, if it means bringing in Werner and Dembele, then you sell Lewandowski, don't you? However, I would also keep him. I mean, I've got Timo Werner down as one of my options.
See, for me, I think you are replacing Lewandowski with a player that's going to cost the same amount as Lewandowski and Timo Werner. I think Werner's 100 million.
I think it'll cost a little bit, yes. But yeah, that's why I went for cheaper options in, say, defence, you know, than like Upamecano. Like, my idea here was I'm going to conserve a little bit of money and spend it. I kind of figured 100 mil on Dembele, maybe 70 on Timo Werner. I think that's probably about what you'd pay.
Okay.
But also, I think you make your team 8 years younger, or you make your striker eight years younger. Yeah. You don't actually lose a lot of production. Like, who's taking more shots this season, Lewandowski or Werner? Werner. Who's taking more shots in the box? Werner. Werner's third in Europe for shots in the box this season. He's taking 4.2 a game.
Yeah, his numbers are really nice.
Lewandowski's taking 2.8 a game in the box. You know who's above Timo Werner in terms of shots in the box in Europe? Cristiano Ronaldo and Luka Jovic. Those are the only two guys right now. So I look at Werner and I think this is a guy who is absolutely ready to lead the line for a genuinely elite side. The last couple of years, expected goals plus expected assists per 90, about 0.6. This season, 0.9. This is meant to be a down year for Leipzig while they wait for Nagelsmann to turn up. That's unbelievable. So imagine him with, you know, your Dembeles, your Fornals, your James Rodriguez, whoever you happen to have there creating behind him. I think that that's a really exciting prospect. Yeah. And my worry as well is that if, I don't know if the Man United hierarchy are going to let Martial go. They want to give him a new contract. They're going to trigger his year extension.
For sure.
And at that point, you're going to have to say to him, okay, well, we wanted to talk to you in January, but now we can't. And you're going to have to wait a year and a half until we can get you out of there.
Right now, United are playing Martial week in, week out because we want him to sign a new contract.
Yeah.
That's the reason he's starting every game.
And the thing is, a lot of clubs are going to be looking for a centre-forward very soon. PSG will look for another forward of some kind once Cavani ages out. Barcelona are going to look for a replacement for Suarez, and they already are doing so. Real Madrid are 100% going to do it. Possibly even Man City might when Chelsea. Aguero ages out, and Chelsea might look to replace Morata. Plus, you know, I think maybe they'll get 3 years out of him, but Ronaldo's not going to live at Juve forever. So there are clubs who are going to be looking for a striker at some point soon, and Werner is absolutely the first place you go and you say to Leipzig, how much do you want? And given that they accepted 66 mil for Naby Keita, I kind of think that 70 for Werner is not that unusual. In fact, Werner's a less unusual player than Keita, you could argue. So I think generally they'll sell when it's reasonable because they're operated like a business mm-hmm. and not in a sentimental way. So I don't know. I think that Werner is your best option. But if you're going to keep Lewandowski, I think Martial is absolutely the sensible thing to do.
Yeah, so I was going to say there's two clear scenarios that presented themselves here. Mm. Sell Lewandowski and bring in Werner, and also selling Lewandowski facilitates probably a move for, what helps us with that move for Dembele.
But then you've got to think of the knock-on effect. They don't sell you Upamecano because they don't sell you Werner and Upamecano in one summer.
It depends. If you offer them obscene money. Yeah. I mean, if you're offering 60 mil for a 20-year-old centre-back who is mostly a prospect yeah. at present,
yeah.
then I think they probably take it because that's ridiculous money.
I think Bayern's obsession with winning the Champions League in the next couple of years would dictate that Uli Hoeneß probably won't part ways with Lewandowski. I'd probably bring in that scenario, I'd bring in, despite obviously Timo Werner's numbers unquestionable at this point and his stock's only going to go on the rise, which also makes me think all the clubs you sounded out there, it's still very possible to get 80 to 100 for Lewandowski at this point if he was to go next summer. But I'd probably go for, yeah, Martial on the left, Lewandowski up front, Ousmane Dembele on the right. I think that's a nice diplomatic way to settle this, and I think that's a very complimentary front three. But I mean, that's going to limit Kingsley Coman's chances. Serge Gnabry obviously gets sold. And
I think you might have to sell Coman. You've spent so much money.
And I think that completes our...
We've gone for the most expensive option almost every time.
It's true, but
how much money have we spent?
We spent, what, 50 on Upamecano. We spent 60 on Brozovic, 110. 30 on your man, Fornals.
So that's 140.
100 on Usman. And then 240, probably upwards 60. Of 70, maybe.
Okay, so that's Martin. So that's 310.
300 mil.
And I don't know how much money we're going to get for Müller. I don't know who's going to pay a lot of money for him. I don't know how much money we're getting for Martinez.
Yeah, 50 mil plus for Thomas Müller.
I don't think there's a lot of money in there. No, you won't. From whom? Who wants him? Chelsea.
Just a
you
country.
Know what? I don't actually hate that. Chelsea playing on the right wing.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing. And it's just the sort of thing Roman will go, oh, you remember? Right. You have seen
so that's
him at
about
World Cup.
It. It's rough.
So in order to properly facilitate this, I mean, we could swap out Martial for Bailey, but they probably cost a similar amount. We could swap out... We could swap out Martial for Pulisic and put Ousmane Dembele on the left.
Or realistically, they don't sign Upamecano because they've got Benjamin Pavard coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, financially, Upamecano would bring us back down to 250, which is a pretty reasonable spend, in my opinion. And
yeah,
that's going to be done over 18 months.
Especially when you're financing with Thomas Müller, Leon Goretzka, etc.
So let's go. I think you get 10 for Goretzka. 15, let's just say. Yeah. Same ballpark as Sebastian. Sebastian Rudy. So 15 to 20. So you get, let's just say, 30 for Thomas Muller.
I genuinely think you get way more than that.
Generous.
There's a lot of there's a lot of old.
I think you'd
heads.
Ask more than that.
There's a lot of old heads out there. I've seen him at World Cups and go, oh, I've done Thomas Muller.
You'd have to try and get that though, because if you weren't, if you didn't get like a 50 mil offer for him, then Bayern fans would go berserk if you sold Thomas Muller.
I think we sell Kingsley Coman to Lyon for 30 to 40 mil, and therein kind of lies a little bit of leeway. So
not bad. Not bad.
There we have it. That's our Bayern Munich fix. Over to you, Uli Hoeneß.
Moving on to Rose Ed now, which was submitted by you guys, the listeners. If you want to be involved next week, follow us on Twitter, follow us on Instagram. Our handles aren't on screen now, but just search our names.
We could put them in the description.
Put them in the description.
That is a thing we could do.
We could. We'll put them in the description if we remember to. Probably
nice.
Won't. Let's move straight into them. Julius Char. Cesar. Had the first one. One of those pronunciations, hopefully, on the button. He says, the Nations League actually being a competition. Seeing big nations face off so much now takes away from how special those fixtures really were. That's his Rose Ed. He wants to kick the Nations League into touch.
What, so he's annoyed that fixtures are no longer rubbish?
He's basically annoyed that the importance of those fixtures has been diluted by the number of times they're played.
But it hasn't, because there's nothing up for grabs except qualification to a tournament, at which there will be something up for grabs. Like I understand what he's saying, as in like, oh, if I've seen France and Germany play like four times before I even get to the Euros, do I care as much about the Euros? But yes, you do, because you're seeing who's going to win the Euros. Like, of course it's more important. I don't know. That seems like a strange argument to me.
I totally disagree with him.
I would agree with the Russian FA. One of the off occasions that I agree with the Ruskies in that they've said it's been a stroke of genius. I think it's been a fantastic tournament so far. It's produced two classic England matches, so what more can you ask for? And
Dutch have beaten the world champions.
I don't agree that it diminishes. How many times, realistically, you only play each other? I mean, if there's four letters right and then four divisions within each letter.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a decent variety.
I think playing each other a bunch of times is just fun. We seem to have forgotten the fun element of football. I don't think it's diluting it at all. Germany Holland was an absolute cracker the other night.
Yeah, it's not like the Super League, which genuinely would be a bit shit. I think.
Yeah.
Like it's actually really exciting.
It's exciting. Yeah. I mean, that
wins, and there's relegation
to the Dutch
and promotion.
100%.
Anyone's going to go, I really missed playing Gibraltar or Malta or whoever the.
England are playing away in Slovakia again for a friendly. Yeah. We're going to watch that one.
Like, I would never normally watch an England match, but if England are playing Spain or Croatia, that's probably worth watching.
Especially if
neutral.
England need to win to get promoted and Harry Kane scores an 85th minute winner.
The French and the Portuguese think this is just a money spinner by UEFA, and no doubt it will put more money in the coffers, but also it gives us a decent platform to play more under-23s, to see more talent in a semi-competitive field.
I couldn't agree more. We are not kicking the Nations League into Rose Ed.
I'm good with it.
It's been a good idea so far. The next one came from 15 Jake Q. He said, Mark Goldbridge and his idiotic comments. He wants to kick Mark Goldbridge into touch.
In fairness, you like him ironically.
You find him
funny, but he's not actually being funny, is he? He's just a tit. Is that not his thing?
No. I actually think he has mastered satirical football comedy to a T.
Okay, so you think this is the office of football?
I 100% think it's the office of football.
If he's always... having a character's always been his plan, then yes, genius. If he's was this person and then just thought, people have reacted well to this and it's something that I could peddle, I'm not sure if he should be institutionalised.
Has he not just done the Tommy Wiseau pivot? Like, Tommy Wiseau set out to make, like, a Scorsese movie when he made The Room, and now he goes to screenings and like glad hands people and he's like, oh yeah, thank you, yeah, it absolutely was intended to be a comedy. And that's not the case. You can see the sadness in his weird fake New Orleans eyes.
you might be right. He might well have pivoted towards being a satirical comedian,
sure,
because he was getting the piss taken out of him so much. But either way, it's absolute gold. Kick Mark Goldbridge into touch right now when he's at the peak of his satirical powers would be a shame.
He's just a poor man's McCubbin.
Oh, that's a hot take.
That's very accurate.
He's made the best of what he's got, and you know that's all you can ask for.
I think fair fucks to Goldbridge. I don't think we should kick that into touch either. One thing I will kick into touch is the one that was sent in by a lot of people on Chris's comments on his Instagram.
This could be anything.
James Carlin was the most notorious. Ramos and Lovren being C-word. I can't say on this podcast for brand purposes, but equally, just generally so being corporate. Idiots. Obviously, this week they've gone backwards and forwards. Lovren called him out, I think, on a Copper 90 video. Ramos responded to that Copper 90 video. And then since then, it's kind of all spiraled out of control. Lovren elbowed him in that match. Ramos posted liked the photo, humiliating Lovren on Instagram. On.
But yeah, what it's do we think? A bit boring, isn't it? I don't know what you guys think. I don't really have much of an opinion on it. I like that Dejan Lovren sort of brought he now has hype men in the form of Virgil van Dijk and I can't remember who else, but people are getting dragged into this. I'm looking forward to it escalating, but it is just a giant waste of time, isn't it?
It is a waste of time, but I'm totally down for football battles becoming a thing in the same way rap battles have, and I'm totally I'm 100% down for gang warfare, to be totally honest.
Okay, but in a rap battle, people are actually like making art. Like these guys are actually terrible at insulting each other. That's my issue. If they went at it really, really hard and they were just like Tupac Biggie era, I'd be totally up for it, but it's not like that at all. It's all just like, I just think he's like a bit of a knob. And it's just whiny. I'm not interested in footballers off the pitch. They're one of the most boring collections of people you could possibly imagine.
Wow.
But they've got no ability. They've got nothing interesting about them except they're really good at football.
Tarring them all with the same brush there.
Of course, because they're incredibly dull.
Wow. Like,
it's a group of people who've forsaken Pato's education to be
Pato's
footballers.
Pato's just kicked footballers out of football.
And this is, and
just
this
play
is why,
football. Just fucking
this is why
play
Pato
football.
Doesn't do personal mastermind, because he'd just cut them down.
Yeah, just play football. That's all I want to see them do. That is the one thing they're good at, play football.
Right, before
even
Pato,
Lovren is arguably not that great at that.
Before Pato explodes, let's quickly move on to facts with Rafa Benitez, because he's just tried to kick footballers out of football.
They're not good.
It's a fact. Facts.
I brought a theme to the table this week. Buzzing. On Facts with Rafa Benitez. It is food and drink. Oh. Okay.
Okay.
So that is the category with which my true lion.
Jamie Oliver's turned up.
It's like Trivial Pursuit.
I find it useful
in the kitchen with a cucumber.
Anchored it in a theme.
Food and drink.
It's a pointless round.
I don't know why that's tickled me so much, but it's great.
So, first fact is I once ordered 7 ribs when I was drunk, wanting 7 individual ribs. Don't ask me why it was that number. But I was ultimately sent 7 boxes of ribs and couldn't pay for them when they were brought to my house.
Interesting.
7 racks of ribs.
University house.
Ooh.
Do you mean racks, or do you mean like the, you know, a box of ribs?
I can give you some extra.
How big were they?
Let's do the others.
I can give you some extra colour. It was from a Chinese.
Do the others. Let's do the others.
Okay. Which is normally half rack. Okay.
That would be fantastic. You must have been drunk if that happened.
I once choked on a piece of salmon and tried to use a coat hanger to dislodge it from my throat.
Oh God.
No way. That would be. That's freaking me out just thinking about it. Getting stuck in the larynx. I won't have it.
I can't think. It's quite soft and salmon.
You always know that I have an extremely dry mouth. And,
you do.
And struggle to swallow.
But I can't imagine you being so stupid that you would put a coat hanger down your throat.
Patrick, on the way to work the other day, I was considering drinking puddle water. You know this. I was choking on a crisp. A Phileas Fogg crisp.
That makes more sense. A coat hanger.
It's a hazard.
It's so dangerous. You could have just massaged the salmon down.
If you bend it the right way, it's effective.
Do the third one.
Oh, God.
The third one. I was once spiked at a club in Leicester and was thrown out for staring at a club wall.
No further questions. Okay, so so the first one,
and obviously usual levels of shithousery in here, that some of them might have elements of truth.
Okay,
so on.
Because I feel like I have heard the third one.
I'm 100% certain. I know you were thrown out of a club for staring at a wall. The question is whether you were spiked.
What were you spiked with?
If you weren't spiked,
what?
It's a great question.
What are you spiked with?
Chemistry.
I didn't get my blood, you know, sort of
analyzed.
So how do you know you're spiked? How do you know you're spiked?
Because I googled the symptoms after 2 days of feeling absolutely
really drunk. How to know if I was spiked? Yeah.
What? And the top one was staring at walls.
All right. What was the brand?
We are going to need to tighten up in this, by the way, because the line between truth and falsehood is very porous.
Very
now.
Thin.
It's very very fine because ultimately it's always done last minute.
Because this is where when you say you choked on some salmon, what was the entire dish?
The entire dish was salmon with new potatoes, and it had, what's that sort of whitish garlicky sauce on the potatoes? Not tzatziki, it is something else.
What do you mean?
It's that sort of...
White wine sauce?
You wouldn't have tzatziki with salmon. But it's,
with a salmon, it's don't like you
herby.
So you just mean a white sauce, yeah?
No, not. It's like a dip.
Oh, a sauce mornay?
Oh.
Potentially. All right.
But you have that with fish.
I also had some...
Yeah, have that with fish.
I also had some asparagus with it.
What was it, roasted?
And I believe simmered in a pan with some butter.
Oh, tickle me. I love a bit of roasted asparagus.
Bit of an aphrodisiac, that. Lauren was trying to get me going, but ultimately I choked on the salmon.
Interesting. But my issue is ruined, this one.
Ruined the,
so
ruined
you
evening.
Had you were using a wire coat hanger.
Yes.
Not a plastic one.
That'd be,
a
that'd
wire
be tremendous.
One. Who has wire coat hangers anymore?
Literally everyone somewhere in their house.
I refuse to what touch them. They freak me out.
What coat hangers are you using?
Plastic and wooden only. Plastic. I can't be seen in a vicinity of a
hates
wire
turtles,
one.
Doesn't he? Absolutely despises.
Well, I'm
the
not
sink.
Putting turtles in the bin. I'm not. I mean, I'm not putting coat hangers.
I'm not putting coat hangers in the bin.
But
yeah, exactly. Like you're not chucking them away.
So you think when if you were choking on salmon, you must have had to go down to your bedroom or up to your bedroom.
No, one floor. Come
you didn't
on.
Just try and cough.
This is London we're talking about.
Oh, it was recently?
Yes.
No chance.
Surely not. You'd have told everyone relentlessly.
That you bend it.
I resent
what shape,
that.
You've what
gone
shape,
on and on.
What shape did you bend it into?
What shape did I bend it into? Pretty much a line. As close to a line as I could get.
The flamingo.
Yeah.
Flattened
what,
in.
Like what? Like a sword eater? You tried to just gurgle it.
If I'm drinking puddle water in the street in London, I actually think that is a very...
I don't think there's a single human in history who's choked on a bit of salmon.
Do you know the layout of the venue where this occurs?
I do.
Okay. So you're eating, where are you eating?
I'm eating on my sofa, which is 5 yards away from my bedroom, 6 yards away from the bathroom.
True.
So rather than run, so you didn't take the extra step to say, go and get water from a tap?
I did. I was choking profusely. The water came back up.
Ooh.
It was gurgling around in my throat. I thought, I'm going to have to bludgeon this fucker all the way down my larynx.
So the salmon had formed a watertight seal at the bottom of your throat.
As far as I was concerned, the salmon had risen from the dead and was flapping its way up my throat.
That's remarkable.
Oh, my God. But it's so soft. You must have been an awful cook to get
salmon.
I'm going to say,
you horribly undercooked this salmon.
Or overcooked. This was after football, and I was voracious in my eating. And when that happens, clog.
So voracious that you had time to boil some new potatoes, simmer some asparagus, toss it in a bit of butter, and cook some salmon.
Put some white wine sauce.
It was made as I walked in. I can assure you, I didn't eat the fish raw whilst preparing the rest of the ingredients.
Well,
right, let's move on to number one. Well, just remind me what it was again.
I once ordered 7 ribs drunk, wanting 7 individual ribs. But was sent 7 boxes of ribs, of course, asking
was
for
this
7
portions
of ribs. No, this was over the phone.
So you rang up, you went, I want
you like, 7 ribs.
7.
And when they
right?
said, and no. when they said, are you sure? You said, yeah.
And you went, yeah. So when you ring up a Chinese,
there's no way they go, seven.
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 Oh, sorry, our racks only come in 9s? Like, yeah. Surely they went, that'll be a rack.
And no, because like, they're loose ribs. They're like spare ribs you get from a Chinese restaurant, right? They're individual ribs, are they not?
They sent me
in a tub.
7 half portions, half racks is what I received.
Interesting.
Half racks.
Interesting.
In boxes?
Yes, in boxes.
The plastic containers.
How much did it come to?
Silver container with a paper lid.
How much did it come to?
Yeah, classy. Good. How much did it come to? It was around the £50 mark.
Jesus.
This is while I was at university.
So was it that you had no accompaniment to the ribs? It was just 7 racks of ribs.
I bet he had one rice.
First year at university. And safe to say that £50 was an awful lot to be spending on ribs. So an argument ensued. Mm. And we ended up just taking the ribs and paying a nominal fee.
A nominal fee?
Sorry, what? So they gave you the ribs but didn't charge you full price?
But blacklisted us.
Hmm. a Chinese restaurant in Nottingham. Yep. Who cares?
I feel like this is potentially true, but I don't feel like the foodage is the right foodage. I reckon he might have rung up and accidentally ordered, I don't know, too much
like
food.
Like 1,000 chicken balls.
Yeah, I don't know, some nonsense, or typed in wrong on an app or something like that, and it did arrive and he was blacklisted, but for a separate reason.
Incident.
In the same way, he might have choked on some salmon, but would probably have either gone to be sick first or flushed it down with some more hardcore liquid.
Yeah, or, you know, just like kind of scraped his teeth
or
afterwards.
Or Lauren would have given you a Heimlich.
Or just patted you on
the back. Lauren give you the Heimlich?
Did you attempt to throw yourself backwards into a wall to dislodge it?
I was looking in the bath as this happened, thinking, shall I do a cartwheel up the wall against the bath and just hope it fucking falls out?
That would have been
was Lauren?
Terrible.
Why was she Heimlich?
I think
you?
Lauren refused to accept how serious it was and just went in the living room.
I thought you were in the living room when you ate it. You were on the sofa.
I was, and then went to the bathroom. Profusely trying to tease him. Fingers down throat.
In the middle of that, you went to get some water.
But you didn't think
about
just grabbing like your toothbrush and using that.
It was all a pink-coloured whirl.
So where was the coat hanger?
The coat hanger? You know, yards away in the bedroom.
But are there not other instruments in the bathroom? Like I just said.
I did consider the rear end of a toothbrush. However, when I thought rear end of the toothbrush... It's always rank, isn't it?
Mine's
all right.
Mine's not.
Fine.
Right, let's make a decision here. I personally think 100% it is the spiking in the club.
I know at least some of that one is true, so I'm going to go for that as well. Like, as soon as he said it, I was like, this one's true. I've heard it before.
Chris Hammer, we'd like to lock in spiking in a club staring at a wall.
I'll go through them one by one.
Oh, of course you will.
It was my friend who ordered the ribs. Shout out, Sean. I did choke on a piece of salmon, but didn't use the coat hanger to dislodge it from the throat.
Knew it.
I was thrown out of a club for staring at a wall.
Oh, fantastic. Nailed it. We've got most of these.
I think we've got pretty much every single one right, other than maybe the first week.
We might need to get people to start sending in three of their own with a separate answer as an audio recording, and maybe they can put us... Those can be put to us on air, because my worry is we know each other's stories too well.
Or we start doing this live and we call people up and we get them to ask stories, because we are going to have to interrogate them.
Or maybe we could bring in another member of the FD team. Something to be thinking about.
Anyway. Yeah. Let us know what you want to do anyway.
Food for thought.
Food for thought. Anyway, that's the end of this week's Sunday Vibes Extra Time. If you enjoyed, please do rate and review us 5 stars. Go back and listen to our other episodes. Check out our YouTube content. And yeah, subscribe to both the YouTube channel and this podcast. Anything to add, guys?
No.
Right.
Bye.
Bye.